Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Back on FNTSY, Fantasy Sports Today, weekend edition. You're going to be hearing us here every weekend. If you haven't heard us here already, you'll be hearing us every weekend, Saturdays and Sundays, 9 to 12. I'll be like that until football season. You usually see a couple of changes around then. But for now, you can expect us 9 to 12 each and every weekend morning. So we were talking a little bit about football. I'll extend it into this hour, and then we can move over to some baseball because, again, Yankees had a pitcher hurt, and I need to talk about this. I need to get off my chest. But two things on the football thing. First, to wrap up kind of what you're talking about is McCaffrey, Freeman. Look, it's crazy how good the running backs are in that division, by the way. So you got Kamara, Freeman, Coleman, McCaffrey. C.J. Anderson might be interesting. And now you got Ronald Jones as a rookie in Tampa. Which I need to be really good because I drafted him in my dynasty league. And I also have Mark Ingram. And guess what? Mark Ingram's out for a month. And when he comes back, is he in the Sean Payton doghouse like he's finding himself at points during his career? There's two guys that are suspended for a month that you have real fantasy impact. Mark Ingram and Julian Edelman. And in both instances, both coaches are known to have doghouses, one of which he'll just outright cut you, but he's not going to cut Edelman. And the other, which like people have pondered about this Sean Payton, Mark Ingram relationship for years. Mark Ingram has been a really good player in the NFL. People have gotten frustrated by the fact that maybe Payton didn't utilize him as much at times. And now it doesn't matter because he's got a really talented running back there that he can share the ball with. Anyway, big impact from those two. But yeah, I'll take Freeman over McCaffrey for now.
The question I think on the McCaffrey front, right? So last year it was 117 carries. Jonathan Stewart got 198. Would you anticipate that CJ Anderson has more carries than him, and would it be 80 more carries?
It's funny. Jake Seeley was on the other day on Fantasy Football Frenzy. You can listen to Fantasy Football Frenzy every weekday from 1 to 2 on the network. Obviously, download it on demand if you so choose. It's Corey Parson, Jake Seeley, and Matt Modica. And Jake, that was Jake's opinion, that C.J. Anderson would be getting up towards that 200 carry mark and McCaffrey would settle in 125, 150, you know, probably some more than last year, but 125, 150, but really try to damage other teams in the passing game. I don't think I would go quite that far on C.J. Anderson, but yeah, he's going to take some carries. Like, yeah, he'll have 100, 150 carries, 100 carries easy. Call it 150, say maybe he and McCaffrey are about the same. You know, what the million-dollar question for that one is, are they finally going to back Cam Newton off of this? They say it. They never do it. They just don't. You know what? They never end up backing off of the carries that Cam Newton has. So last year, what you said, Cam led the team in rushing yards.
Yeah.
What's even more important is how about rushing attempts? Cam Newton, 139, which was about 22 more than Christian McCaffrey. Cameron Artis Payne last year, he appeared in 13 games. He had 18 carries. So I know everybody wants to get all jacked up about Cameron Artis Payne. I just don't see it. He would have been a bigger part of the offense last year if they considered him to be that. And he's 27 years old. So only a year younger than Cam Newton, by the way. So I think C.J. Anderson's a part of that. He's going to – but the 198 that Jonathan Stewart had, I don't know. That seems a bit aggressive.
I think, though, the other part of the equation for McCaffrey is the addition of D.J. Moore as well, right? Because McCaffrey last year led them in catches with 80. He was tied with Funchess for targets with 113. I mean, if D.J. Moore is what they expect him to be, he's going to eat into that number for sure. And also, that was with Greg Olsen missing all of that time. Like, you know that he's going to be getting a number of targets. So, and I'm kind of just talking through this on air. I'm wondering if maybe McCaffrey is someone like, I guess he could get better, right, as a sophomore. But I wonder if that just balances out because there are maybe more mouths to feed than we realize.
Conceivable, but let's look at the target numbers for last year. Yeah, McCaffrey led the team. Funchess right there with him. Kelvin Benjamin at 51. He was obviously traded. Ed Dixon, who saw the majority of that while Greg Olsen was out. Greg Olsen only 38. Russell Shepard, Curtis Samuel, who was banged up a lot. He only started 4 games. I think Curtis Samuel is a name that people have dismissed, but it needs to be considered. The reality for this core is that it's McCaffrey starting. Anderson is likely the pair to him, or even the guy who sees the most carries. Olsen, primary target. McCaffrey, secondary target. Funchess, probably the third. I'm just talking about numbers of targets. Funchess, third. Then
DJ Moore's fourth?
Is it Torrey Smith? Is it DJ Moore? Is it Curtis Samuel? I think moving forward, this team should look like Curtis Samuel, Christian McCaffrey on the field at the same time. A lot of speed there. Then he can finally start getting away from Cam Newton carrying the ball so much. He had 139 carries last year. Like, let's back that down to 100. Let's give those 39 carries to Christian McCaffrey. Then he's over 150. Let's bring C.J. Anderson in here and, you know, have him around 150 carries. I'm just throwing numbers around. But it comes down to one thing with this offense. Cam Newton isn't that accurate. He just isn't historically been accurate. Last year's 59%. That's around where Cam Newton hovers. And that's not good enough, quote unquote, in the NFL these days. Now, he does add a component to his play, which is vastly unique. The only other guy that has a component like that is Russell Wilson. So that has to be considered in all of this, but Cam Newton really can't. They will struggle if it is a downfield attack. That's why the Torrey Smith thing is always kind of curious. He did do well with Steve Smith, so there might be some data out there that suggests that Cam is actually okay on a deep ball, but it doesn't appear that way to me. I think they want a lot of ball control passing. Samuel, McCaffrey, Olsen, Funchess. DJ Moore is a rookie, and he's talented and all that kind of stuff, but rookie wide receivers typically don't have a big impact. Could he be the one wide receiver that does, like Juju Smith-Schuster last year? Maybe, but they don't typically have a big impact. And in a team like this that doesn't pass all that well, I'm not lining up to draft DJ Moore this year.
Well, I think in terms of the deep ball stuff, I don't think it's that Cam has a bad deep ball. It's that he throws it more often than anyone. I think that's part of the reason why the completion percentage is so low, but
that's part of it. Yeah,
I think the thing here that jumps out to me, and again, it's just kind of talking through it while we're on air, is there. I don't think there's any way that McCaffrey ends up being first in targets again. Like he was able to get to 113 tied with Funchess. I would expect that Greg Olsen probably leads them in targets, and I don't even know if he would be second. Like I very much so could see it being Funchess. And if they like DJ Moore, I mean, this team is expecting DJ Moore to give them some very, very real value. And if Curtis Samuel is as good, like again, maybe that 113 turns into 95. That's a big difference. Like McCaffrey's value mostly is in the passing game. So this is a really, really interesting thing. The more you dive into
it. He carried the ball 117 times last year, 2 touchdowns, 3.7 yards per carry.
He didn't pop any of those big runs.
No, he didn't, and I get that. But they're not going to, you're talking about a possible decrease in his role. That obviously won't happen. So if there is a game plan to utilize him slightly less in the passing game, which I don't see, I think you could count on identical numbers in the pass game. I would count on that. And I think they just bump up his carries. Like, I think you're still going to be looking at around 80 catches for him.
Well, could it be identical,
could it
though?
90, 100, maybe. But say that again?
I just don't know how it could be identical when they add Greg Olsen and DJ Moore into the equation. I just feel like...
I think you're counting on too much from a rookie. I know exactly what you're saying. I think your logic is fine. I don't think it's flawed logic. I just... He is a priority for them.
Yes.
To get the ball to. They are going to force him the ball, and Olsen is the best player of that group, career-wise. You know, Greg Olsen's also 33. He's coming off. You know, he had an injury-riddled year last year. I love him as a player. I obviously will have concerns about him this year because I don't know. You know, can he continue to bounce back off of stuff like that? So, it is a priority. I think you can count on him touching the ball. So he had it 197 times last year. I think he could ramp that up to 225 to 250 for Christian McCaffrey. He's just going to touch the ball more than he did last year, in my opinion. He only started 10 games last year.
So I have actually
ramped that up to 16. Do you know what I mean?
No, yeah, I know what you're saying. But actually, on this point, I have another question then for you. Terms of evaluating, because right now, at least again on the draft app for best balls, Calvin Ridley has a higher ADP than Mohamed Sanu, and I'm wondering if that is a mistake.
Yeah, that's been a confusing one. Yeah, people are also talking about Ridley catching a lot of deep balls in OTAs recently. I think people get a little hyped up, but look, what can we do? We're trying to analyze it. We use every piece of information that we have access to. Something like that is curious. That's a good one. I've been thinking about that one a lot, the Sanu Ridley thing, and I don't know how it's going to play out. That's a wait and see scenario,
right?
Which I hate to use that as a cop out, but I think we need to learn a little bit more about that and how much do they really like Sanu versus Ridley. And look, they drafted Ridley, right? So they obviously felt like they needed to upgrade the receiving core. And last year, Sanu had he did throw a 51-yard touchdown pass. That should be noted. But his catch numbers, he had 96 targets last year, 67 receptions, 703 yards, 5 touchdowns. That was pretty good, especially considering where his ADP was. That was in 15 starts. You know, I think he hangs on to that role, and they're just going to bring him in. They're going to bring Ridley in when they're good and ready. But I don't think it's that he immediately supplants Mohamed Sanu. They go three wides, though. He's out there. They got Justin Hardy. Justin Hardy's fourth season. He hasn't made much of an impact for them. So I think that's it. You know, they're going three wide. That's what they got. And Austin Hooper is an up-and-coming tight end. He's now, this is his third season. So I do like their weapons there, though. I think Ridley, of all the rookie wide receivers, he could be in the best position of all of them. You know, I know people like DJ Moore, his talent and everything, and that could be a good long-term play. But I don't see DJ Moore making a big impact this year from pass catching just because of all the reasons we just stated. You know, that's a lot of guys to have to win snaps over. You know what I mean?
Your boy James Washington actually went best balls out. And he is someone that I keep
saying. Say that one more time.
James Washington, the Steelers wide receiver out of Oklahoma State who got drafted this year. He's one of those guys. I mean, I don't think I would be taking him in. That feels a little too risky. At least I haven't been in any that I feel deep enough to justify that. But he is someone that if I were in a dynasty league, I feel like I would be pretty high on. It's the Mason Rudolph.
Yeah. Thing.
And the
I
fact that
him.
The Steelers
I wanted
always
him. Could get him.
The Steelers always produce these good wide receivers.
They have been, had a really good track record recently. There's no doubt about it. They obviously had to get rid of one of them in Bryant, but it's because Juju was so good last year.
I cannot AFC West.
And look, he will be a part of that receiving core. It's not as deep as it was. They had other guys in years past that would come in, like an Eli Rogers and others, but James Washington will get an opportunity to be out there. Right now on the rosters, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, James Washington, Darius Hayward-Bey, Justin Thomas, Justin Hunter, who was on the team last year, and then, you know, a few other guys that aren't going to make the team. So James Washington is going to be out there getting snaps and hopefully making an impact, because his team still has the talent to get it done. Obviously, wide open gaping hole at middle linebacker for probably forever. You know, I think Ryan Shazier has seen his last down. I'm rooting for him, but the Steelers are just going to have to make do with what they have there. They didn't address the defensive side of the ball much in the draft. First round was a safety. Fifth round, another safety. But outside of that, it was really you know, a fullback and you know, another offensive lineman, and obviously James Washington. So we'll see. They got Mason Rudolph in the third round. I don't really know if that was a wise pick, but Landry Jones is probably – Landry Jones, Josh Dobbs, one of those guys can't be feeling too good right now.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, Big Ben is also very upset.
I can't do this. I can't do the Ben Roethlisberger thing. It irritates me so much. So, real quick, T.O. boycotting the Hall of Fame. Have a problem with it?
I honestly think it's a bad look. I think that was a foolish move.
Yeah. Okay, we're coming back talking MLB right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back on FNTSY. Fantasy Sports Today. Rob Bow, fantastic producing today. It's been an eclectic collection of music today, which I kind of like. A lot of hip hop in there. I'm a big fan. So,
Rob and I were fighting over music.
Yeah, I had a show to do, so I wasn't going to get involved in the G-chat war that you guys were having about Kanye's latest album being dropped, and I haven't heard any of it yet. So
it's not fighting when one person is right.
Thank you for conceding.
That's
I was
what I
right.
To say to my wife. That's what I try to say to my wife, and then I find out that I'm the one that was wrong the whole time. So, in any event, if you want a chance to win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game, go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. There, you'll find a link to a free DFS baseball contest every day. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. While 30% of the patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, nearly 14,000 people each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. Find out how you can help and play in free DFS contests with a shot at winning two tickets to a 2018 World Series game. So go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. So, all right, I'm going to give you guys a minute on the music battle that you're having. So Kanye's album drops, what was it, this week? Was it last week?
I think.
The weird photo album cover?
Well, what you mean, the controversy with Whitney Houston's old house, the bathroom photo?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Didn't Kanye's album photo cover, didn't he just like take it with his iPhone as he was driving to the album party in Wyoming, the album drop party in Wyoming, and then wrote something on it with it? Like, wasn't that the story behind it?
Probably. I honestly, I'm out on Kanye. I have not listened to that album.
It's good.
All right. So, Rob, did you listen to it?
Yeah, I listened to it. But the album we're talking about is a different album. Yeah, I listened to it. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. But the album that just came out that we're arguing about is Kanye West and Kid Cudi. And it's a really good album. Kevin is just lost in, I don't know what he's listening to. Probably something stupid.
Got it.
I'll tell you what, Mike. I listened to the first two songs, and it was too many. Absolutely terrible. Rob suggested one.
Well, you
got
to listen to the whole album.
Just listen to it.
I didn't want to. Someone was playing it at my other job, so I happened to have to listen to it.
Listen to Fourth Dimension. That's all I'm going to say. It's a good song.
Listen to that. And
are you out on Kanye in general, Kevin?
Yes.
Are you just out on Kanye? Guys, all right, so that paints the whole... Well, you have to admit that coming in. Like, you should say, I'm not really much of a Kanye fan.
No. I think Kanye's been releasing incredible music for years. This recent iteration of Kanye, super out on it, musically and personally, super out on that.
Got it. Okay. All good. All right, so I guess... All right, so... Continue to debate at home whether or not you like Kanye's recent
Kanye
release.
I just wanted
to get some thoughts on it. So the Kanye West Kid Cudi album is something to listen to, maybe more than his solo release. Good stuff. So here's the big story that I want to talk about with Major League Baseball. And there's a million radio shows that are going to do something like this, but I need to know, like, what is the point of the DH anymore? Last night, Tanaka is on third base, tags up, and I don't blame Phil Nevin, third base coach. You're trying to win a game. It's, you know, 1-0 game. He sends his pitcher, who's normally not out there running at all because he's an American League pitcher and he rarely bats, and he leaves the game with two tight hamstrings. I'm not sure actually what the prognosis is as of this moment, but last time something like this happened on the base pass, I believe it was at Citi Field, and he tweaked a hamstring or an ankle or something like that and forced him to miss a start. So hopefully he doesn't miss any time here, but we have an issue, Kev.
Yeah, I think this stuff is terrible. I have no idea why anybody wants to not have the DH. First of all, I think it is so insane. Like, every time I really think about this, the fact that baseball treats the National League and the American League as if they are should be played under different rules, I find that preposterous. What is the argument for having pitchers hit? You're basically fighting for less quality play. I don't even understand it. Like, there's more of a risk for injury, and it is almost every time an automatic out, typically an automatic strikeout. I don't know what I really don't even know the defense for. I feel like it's just people who are fans of National League teams were like, yeah, National League baseball. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So the only other major league, I shouldn't say major league, the only other prominent league in the world that uses it is the Central League of Japan. I was just looking at this last night. Yomiuri Giants famously won the most titles in Nippon Baseball League, and so they play with DH still. Outside of that, these guys grow up. They're playing college ball. They're playing in the minors. They're playing, summer ball in certain instances. Once they get to be a talented pitcher, they're not putting them out there hitting anymore. In high school, yes, the best players are going to probably pitch and hit and do all that kind of stuff. But once you get to these prominent leagues and you're playing in minor leagues and getting paid to do it, these guys aren't hitting. They're not hitting with any regularity at all. I think people will point and say, well, Max Scherzer's hitting .310. I get it. He's the exception. He's not proving the rule. Most of the guys are getting up there just waving at it, especially an American League pitcher. I understand Tanaka was on base, so that's what creates this problem, but in general, I think it's well past the point of no return. They're just automatic outs, and I don't really see the point of it. I know that people have a hard time letting go of tradition, and there's a certain way that National League managers have to manage, which is thoughtful and institute strategy, but I just think it's the past the point of no return. Guy, everybody throwing 100 miles an hour. So you're sending guys up there that don't really do this that much, and they aren't effective. And they get on the base pass and hurt themselves. I'm not overreacting to one thing because this has happened too many times. And I just think it's time to go. I used to give the National League the space to say, yeah, let's, you know, just go ahead and do it. But interleague play has been around for a long time now. And they should just be all on the same page. I don't see the point of it. So that's where I'm at.
I don't understand, though. Like, even if you were on the other side of this, it does seem that, like, people, the National League diehards that feel like pitchers should hit, they feel as if that's what the AL should be doing. I don't understand why baseball is trying to present this thing as if they are, like, they're literally playing under a different set of rules. That is preposterous. Like, if the NBA treated the Eastern and Western Conference with a...
It's silly. That's exactly right. They wouldn't do that.
Like, with a significant rule change, right. That'd be crazy. If we had the NFC and the AFC have different rules, like, what? I don't even understand how somebody would say, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good thing. I have no comprehension why anybody wants this. I would almost rather have it just be uniform that pitchers hit than have to do this back and forth.
No.
It makes no sense. No.
No, don't do that. I'm not making that concession in this argument at all, ever.
Well, it shouldn't
go back the other way.
No, I would
They won't ever get rid of the DH because the Major League Baseball Players Association wouldn't allow it. There are extremely high-paid hitters that are DHs. David Ortiz is now retired, but he is a primary example of that. They want guys that can get jobs like that. The pitchers aren't going to lose jobs. They're just not going to hit. They just, you know what I mean? Like, think of that. They're just not going to hit anymore.
So then,
you don't want to get rid of the position player that makes big, big money in order to accommodate the history of Major League Baseball.
I agree. No, so my
Players Association wouldn't allow it.
My reason of even saying that, though, is at least there's logic. Like, at least logically, everything would be in line. And also, why wouldn't the Players Association then be pushing heavily for this to infiltrate the National League? Again, this to me is just, it's the craziest part of this whole thing, is that people are in favor of treating the conferences, because that's what they are. They're not new leagues. They're different conferences, as if they are different sports. It's like, it is as if the Eastern Conference played with the European goaltending rule, and the Western Conference played with the NBA goaltending rule. And then when they played during the regular season, depending on home court, it would then determine the goaltending rule.
It's not quite that.
It's not quite that, but I get it.
Yeah, I know. You're doing it on the fly. I can appreciate that, obviously. But, you know, as far as the number of times, like, goaltending impacts per game, like, in that instance, it would happen far more, right? Like, European, like, international rules, FIFA basketball rules with offensive goaltending to the uninitiated. There is no offensive goaltending. You can touch the ball over the cylinder, on the rim, whatever you want to do. Obviously, here, there's an imaginary cylinder going all the way up into the sky that you're not supposed to touch the ball on unless you're a star player and then they don't call it on you. But you're also not allowed to touch it off the backboard or any of that kind of stuff. Here. FIFA, that's all good. If you're, you know, from an offensive goaltending standpoint, you can mess with the ball at any time. Defensively, there's still goaltending calls, but offensive goaltending, you can just touch the ball whenever it's around the rim, on the rim, on the backboard, whatever. So anyway, so that's where I'm at. We'll probably put up a poll here so y'all can vote on it here over the course of the next 24 hours. And that's it. I said my piece. Going to the game. It was a pitcher's duel there for a few innings. Hang on one second. I'll let you get back to it. Tanaka goes 5 innings. He had only given up 1 run, struck out 8. He was having a great outing. DeGrom matching it the whole way. In the 8th inning, he had 2 outs, top 8. He had only given up a run, and then, in fact, it was an unearned run. He had 8 strikeouts, and then guess what? Brett Gardner took him yard. I was watching live when that happened. I was as shocked as anybody, but Gardner has been on fire recently, and he hits a 2-run home run. It hit the top of the fence and bounced over. and the Yankees end up winning the game ultimately 4-1. Stanton tacked on a home run in the ninth inning, and DeGrom, for the first time in a while, gave up two earned runs in a start, but he takes his first loss of the season 4-1. Yankees patched it together with bullpen. Jonathan Holder, a perfect inning. Chad Green came in for an inning. Betances and then Chapman, and they locked it down those last four innings. They only gave up three hits total, no runs, three strikeouts. So nice job by the Yankees bullpen, obviously, coming in after Tanaka hurt himself on the base pass. So go ahead, Kev.
What I was going to ask for Rob Bowe's opinion on the DH, no DH, because I know he is a Mets fan and was a pitcher at one point. So I was curious how he would feel. Perhaps us American leaguers are biased.
I personally have no opinion on it.
Fantastic.
I like...
no opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to see a pitcher hit like a home run, but other than that, I just don't really care. You know what I mean? It's just an out.
Yeah.
Indifferent.
Yeah. I mean, different.
So
that's
the
word.
Point. Yeah, it should... Yeah, so it... But it shouldn't be... Yeah, but I think Rob's attitude is indicative of, like, people are like, it doesn't really matter. Like, this guy's probably going to get out. And then Bumgarner or Scherzer hit a home run, and people are, you know, the purists are like, see? Their ninth hitter couldn't have done that. It's like, all right, we're talking about a couple of guys that hit a few home runs a year. Mostly these guys are hitting under 100, you know? And God forbid a reliever has to get up there. It's even worse. You know, usually they don't, but anyway, so Brett Gardner, speaking of on fire, he is in his last seven games, 14 for 34, hitting .412, getting on base at a .429 clip, and three homers. Last 15 games hitting .358, and last 30 games hitting .295. So there was a moment there where Gardner was really kind of floundering at the plate, and you look down at the Yankees' batting averages, and you're like, how are they winning all these games? But it's players like Gardner and Andujar and Torres, who's cooled off a little bit, but they have been carrying the team for a few weeks here. Obviously, Judge is still doing his thing, but his average has even dipped down to .271. So, anyway, big win for the Yankees. DeGrom's first loss of the year. Obviously, they continue to not support him whatsoever. Brandon Nimmo hit a leadoff home run off Tanaka, who's been very susceptible to the home run ball in the last couple of years. And this year, he's given up a home run, I believe, in almost every start or eight straight starts, something like that. But after the Brandon Nimmo home run, three hits for the rest of the night. That was it. So the last 8 2/3, in fact, he was the first batter of the game. So after Nimmo hits a home run in the first at bat for the remaining nine innings, they managed only three hits.
This is actually the doing of George Kurtz, I believe, though, because we had discussed him one of the days that he had filled in for you. And I think, yeah, you came in for the first hour, but then he did the 2 hours on a Saturday and then did the whole Sunday show. And on that Saturday, he was saying, I think we need to get maybe Brett Gardner out because he's just been absolutely horrible. And then it was, and I don't know if this is exactly lines up with 15 days, but that Saturday night they played the Angels and he had a home run in the first inning. It was a leadoff homer for the Yanks. They were home though. And I mean, he's been pretty much.
It was exactly 2 weeks ago today.
So this is entirely the doing of George Kurtz. You will never be able to convince me otherwise. So
I remember having discussions with people offline about, you know, it's time to just get Frazier up here and let Gardner, Hicks, and Frazier battle it out. And who's ever the best can just be out there. So, yeah, maybe it's George Kurtz providing some fire. But bottom line is he's been great. It's been great for a month. You know, like he had started to heat up a little bit then. But now the last 2 weeks, he's really been on fire to the point he's hitting .395. So other quick game I want to go to, Brewers put a hurting on the Phillies yesterday, 12-4. Lorenzo Cain, two RBIs. He goes 2-for-5. Christian Yelich, 2-for-5. Two runs scored. He has an RBI. Aguiar, 1-for-4. Two runs scored, two RBIs. Travis Shaw, 1-for-3. Two runs scored, an RBI. And Ryan Braun, 2-for-4, two runs scored and five ribbies yesterday, I believe. Yeah, he had two home runs yesterday, a three-run homer and then a two-run homer. So Big day for Ryan Braun, who gets the average up to 236, but collects five RBIs right there. Tough guy to own in fantasy, but nonetheless, Orlando Arcia pitches in two hits, two for five. On the other side of the ball, Cesar Hernandez, three for five. Kingery, one for four with a ribby. Home run for Carlos Santana. He's one for two with a run scored. Chacin with the win. He moves to 5-1 on the year. Velasquez with the loss. He goes 3 2/3, 10 earned runs. How's your ERA? Kevin and I will be back after this talking a little bit more baseball.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back in FST, closing out the show. 3 hours went by quick. Man, it's one of those days. A lot to talk about, so we kept it moving. Talked some NFL. We talked with Scott Fish, at ScottFish24 on Twitter. Great dude. Raises a lot of money for charity. Go to fantasycares.net, please, to find out a little bit more about it. See if you can join the Scott Fish Bowl. Doesn't if you donate to fantasycares.net, doesn't mean you get a spot in Scott Fish Bowl, but hopefully get a spot in Scott Fish Bowl and then donate. Or maybe you donate and feel good about yourself for the rest of the day. But the bottom line is it helps provide kids with a Toys for Tots situation. Buy it in various cities around the country. He's in Minnesota, but he distributes to people around the country so that they can provide gifts to kids at Christmas, which what's better than that? So we talked NBA in the first hour. Obviously, the Warriors complete the sweep over the Cavs. The big story is that LeBron's hand was likely broken due to a self-inflicted injury after the Game 1 loss. That's come out of it. And now we've been talking MLB. Poll going up here in a minute on Twitter about the DH rule. You can vote on it, whether we should have it, whether we shouldn't, or whether I should shut up and start talking about football again. So, Kev, you wanted to ask a question about the Mets?
Well, yeah. It's funny how I feel like this does keep happening. It's almost like we're speaking our discussions into existence. But last week, we kind of went really in-depth into the idea of whether the Mets should actually trade DeGrom. Does that mean that they should move on to Syndergaard? And the report came out from the Post that they are going to be willing to move DeGrom or Syndergaard come the trade deadline this year, most likely. I also saw a report. I wasn't able to really get into it to read the whole thing. I believe it was an article written by Joel Sherman. But I think that it kind of indicated what the Mets would be looking for in exchange for DeGrom or Syndergaard from the Yankees, where apparently they would be demanding Gleyber Torres, Miguel Andujar, Clint Frazier, Justice Sheffield, and another high-end prospect, which is a level of, that's just insanity. But I guess perhaps we can start at the beginning of this.
It's okay to ask for it.
Yeah, you can ask for it, but hung up on.
It's okay to ask for it. That's how negotiations work. You just ask for the moon, and then, if you insult somebody, then they walk away. But it's okay to, this is where we'd like to start. And then the Yankees would say, okay, well, Torres is off the table completely. So who else would you like? Frazier and Justice Sheffield for DeGrom? All right, let's do it. That's a quick way to get to it, but maybe the Mets won't think that's enough. Is it those two in a draft pick? Who knows?
So let me ask you this.
That kind of stuff.
I was talking with my brother about this. He's a Mets fan. And I was like, Andujar for Frazier and one of the Yankees' two best pitching prospects. And his point was, Andujar's good, but I don't care about
what was that? Frazier Andujar, and the two of the best pitching prospects.
One of the two best pitching prospects, as how I put it. And he kept coming back to the whole Clinton Frazier thing, where he's like, "Do the Mets really have any need for him if they already have Conforto and Nimmo who are young? Lagares is on contract. Bruce is on contract. Cespedes is on contract. They just put an outfielder in the farm system with the sixth overall pick in the draft." And I was kind of going back and forth. I was like, I don't know if the Mets are in a position, and I don't even know if in baseball where you really worry about positions that way. But then it kind of made me think about, would they then, if that trade got done, would they think about trading Cespedes / should they regardless? Basically trading the whole Mets.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a good question, but I think to your point, they're going to continue to move this around, right? I don't think they can be super. Outfield might be the place where they actually have some talent, but I don't think they can be overly concerned with that at the moment, because they'll probably make additional moves. You know what I mean? Like, I know they just signed Jay Bruce, but if come trade deadline, they can get something. They can put him at first, or if come trade deadline, if somebody's like, you know what, we want to use Jay Bruce's power for the next two seasons, which I can't imagine that there's a team out there considering the guy can't hit home runs right now. Do you know what I mean? They'll move him too. They'll just keep moving guys off like they did at the end of last year. They'll continue to like strip it down to build it back up. So yeah, maybe those aren't the first guys that they would want, but yeah, I think you got to take a look at like exactly what you have in talent. You know, the Mets farm system is ranked in the bottom five or six in the whole league. So they need a way to ramp that back up. So yeah, I think it's okay for them to ask for a haul for stuff. I really find it hard to believe that they're going to trade either of these guys to the Yankees. I just do. I find it really hard to believe. So, but it is a good. It'd be a good trade partner, and it's one of the few times where it's a really good trade partner. And whether it's they want Justin Sheffield and Frazier, or they want Chance Adams, who the Yankees really don't want to give up, we'll see. I mean, the Yankees are struggling right now with pitching because Sonny Gray isn't what they expected. Jordan Montgomery is now out for the year with Tommy John surgery. Chance Adams may not be ready yet. Severino has been lights out, and Tanaka's been really good, but now does he go on the DL with this hamstring thing? And CC Sabathia is solid. But I think we all know, every Yankees fan knows, and many people in Major League Baseball know, this team's going to go out there, they're going to win 95 games, they're going to compete for the division. None of this matters. The Yankees can coast to the playoffs the way that they hit. But can they win in October? And right now, the Astros are still better than them. They just are. The Yankees don't have the arms to match. And they're going to need somebody to get them over the hump. Now, does Cashman want to continue to mortgage the future a little bit? They've had such a wealth of prospects that they've been able to trade all these guys and still be in good shape. But don't know. Don't know if they want to give up all that much. But the Yankees outfield is a crowded one. So,
see, that's the thing.
Frazier, as much as I want to keep Frazier, he's probably going to be one of the ones to go. I would love to keep him. I like him a lot. He'll be the one. Of all the guys that got traded in these last two seasons, in the last year, he's the one I'll be most bummed about. The most.
Yeah, I think the thing, though, becomes, is it really mortgaging the future if you already have the future integrated into what you're currently doing? When Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez are two of your most important guys, and there just isn't really a spot for Clint Frazier. I mean, that's kind of the thing. It's like, even if Brett Gardner played himself out of a starting position, which he's obviously not doing right now, like Aaron Hicks is still probably next in line. So Clint Frazier, that's kind of why the situation is where it is. Like, yeah, giving up Andujar might be rough, but he also could be replaced by Manny Machado come the offseason. Well, I wonder if the, you know, it's a scenario where I understand the concept of you don't want to be too nearsighted. Like, you want to be able to know what is down the road while appreciating what's in front of you. But I feel as if the Yankees do have a chance to win the World Series this year. Yes, their pitching is far behind that of the Astros, even the Indians, assuming that they'll still be there, probably the Red Sox as well. But their pitching wasn't all that stellar last year, and they were a game away from the World Series. Sonny Gray's looked a little bit better. The injuries are coming, but this team is going to have to make a move for a pitcher. And if the Mets are shopping him, and there ends up being a real discussion, I don't think that they could hesitate because they are excited about what Justice Sheffield could be, or hesitate because they feel that Clint Frazier one day takes over for Brett Gardner in 2 years, or they want security in case Manny Machado doesn't come. Like, no, you just got to put Neil Walker over at third, or Gleyber at third and put Neil Walker at second, like whatever it may be. I just think with the opportunity that sits in front of them this year, because I don't think it is mortgaging the future. The window remains open regardless of Frazier and Andujar and Justice Sheffield being on this team.
Yeah, so, and to keep in mind, Gardner is not a – is the Yankees can buy Brett Gardner out for $2 million at the end of the year. So he's not a free agent, but the Yankees can just be like, all right, thanks, Brett. You know, here's $2 million bucks, and you're a free agent. And then, you know, there's a spot there for Clint Frazier. You know, Aaron Hicks has obviously been consistently the starting center fielder. Then you'd have Frazier, Hicks, Judge, and then you have Stanton DHing, right? Gary Sanchez's defensive struggles be damned. You know, the irony is that Austin Romine is hitting the hell out of the ball. By the way, the Yankees' top prospect right now is Estevan Florio, another outfielder. And then it's three pitchers, Justice Sheffield, Albert Abreu, and Chance Adams. Luis Medina is their fifth. Freisier Perez, Domingo Acevedo. So of the Yankees' top prospects, one, two, three, four, five, six of the top seven are pitchers. So they feel like they have a wealth of arms. Are they all super top quality? Probably not, but, you know, that's where we're at. The Yankees can afford to give up a pitcher or two. They're not all going to work out. They just got to be right about the ones that they're willing to let go. So I think the Mets can ask for the world. I don't think they're going to do it with the Yankees, but if the Yankees are the best trade partner, they should do it. I just don't think the Mets will do it. Even if the Yankees are the best trade partner, I don't think the Mets will do it. That's my thoughts.
I still agree with you. There was another discussion that I was having, because apparently at Mad Bum's return start, the Yankees had scouts there, I believe. And I was just having a conversation, and it is, you know, it's I guess what rich people problems. If the Yankees traded for Madison Bumgarner and they were in a wild card game, who gets the ball, him or Severino?
It would be dependent on how Bumgarner pitched when he got here. He's obviously got the better standing in Major League Baseball, but if he came over and Sonny Grayed it, then Severino pitches. If he comes over and he's Madison Bumgarner, I think Severino has something to strive for. Do you know what I mean? Like, hey, you've been great this year, but Bumgarner's Bumgarner, and he wins. He eats games like this for lunch. So he's going to pitch game one, and you'll pitch game two, and we're going to win the World Series because of it. And if he doesn't understand that, then
I'm saying
Giants are concerned, the Giants were brutal early in the season, but they caught fire. They've won right now. They've won 7 of 10. That whole division is actually playing well. Four of the five teams are 7 of their last 10 right now, to the point where the Giants, Dodgers, Rockies, and Arizona are all over 500. Yeah. The Padres are 29-36, which is actually a lot better than people expected. Now, that'll probably continue to go south, but they've won 7 of their last 10. And, you know, scouting the Giants games made sense when they weren't challenging for anything. They're a game and a half out of first place right now. So the last guy they're going to look to get rid of is Madison Bumgarner. How will they look 6 weeks from now? I don't know. What if it's the same thing? What if they're a game and a half out of first place? You wouldn't trade Bumgarner. And they remade themselves a little bit these last couple of off seasons. They're not throwing in the towel like the Padres and other teams, that, you know, the Royals and the White Sox. They're not. It's not tankalicious time. Wait to see the Orioles. Man, that could be a sell-off. That could be interesting. So, but your Machado rental better not be too expensive, you know, because you don't know if you're going to get them back. That's the problem with the Machado trade. If you're going to rent them like the Brewers did with CC Sabathia, it might just be that.
I feel like, well, you know, it's funny to your Padres point. Padres are the best last place team out of any of these divisions. But they also, I think, have the worst place team, or they are close to the Indians, at least the Diamondbacks are. I think they have a game off in the loss column, yeah. I do think the Dodgers end up probably coming out of that division. I'm just starting to see they do have the best run differentials now if they get healthier. I feel like they are still a team that will be active come deadline time. I will say one of the more jarring things as I was just looking through the standings is the Mariners have pushed themselves up to the best record at the moment in the West.
Yeah, since Robbie Cano left that team, they've been on fire. They've been really good. So,
baseball is so weird.
Funny how that can happen, but they are in first place right now, just ahead of Houston. I think we know how that'll play out long term, but good on them for not folding when Robbie Cano went down. I know that, you know, we've seen other situations like that where teams have played well in spite of one of their best players going down. Even in baseball, you know, we saw that, excuse me, with some other teams in the past. I think the Giants, one of the years they won the World Series, he wasn't one of their best players, but Melky Cabrera was dinged for 80 games. And when he was able to come back in time for the end of the regular season, and they just told him to stay home. They just didn't want him to be around the team. So there you go. Let me see if I can do one more box score before we get out of here. In This League is next with Welsh and the Bogman. Bogman and the Welsh. I mess that up all the time. It's my bad, guys. Bogman and the Welsh. So last one. I'll do one last one. Actually, let me look at the poll. Forget doing the box score. We're getting out of here in about 1 minute. So let's see if we can get the poll up there. I asked, so go to at FNTSY Radio, if we're finally done with the DH in light of Tanaka's injury. And it's either a yes, no, or shouldn't we be talking about football? So go on there. The poll's not up yet, but we'll get it up there, and we'll get you some results on that maybe tomorrow. Maybe Kevin will do that with George Kurtz tomorrow. You excited to do some stuff with George? Oh, we should give 30 seconds to the Capitals. How about that? Capitals win. First championship since 1991. George can talk about it at length tomorrow because he knows a lot about hockey, more than anybody I know.
Well, I am definitely going to give George time tomorrow to get into that, because one of the things I look forward to asking him about is the way hockey is so different in basketball, where, right, like the odds have already come out. Everybody's expecting the Warriors to be back, and the only reason that the Cavs aren't higher in the odds is because the uncertainty as to whether LeBron will be there. I just saw some people you know, discussing the whole thing. It's like, even if, you know, like, did the Caps really break a curse? Like, they still have been sometimes a team that has a letdown come postseason time. And I mean, Vegas, when I got to talk to George about Vegas, we kind of did a Stanley Cup preview. We did a whole hour on it, actually. The shows that you had missed. And he was like, this makes no sense. He's like, they should not be this good. And there's a very real chance that it could be a flash in the pan type. Excited to get into that stuff with him.
Probably will. Like Leicester City in the Premier League couple of years ago. They won it, and then they're back in the pack. So, look, folks, thanks for listening. 3 hours up and 3 hours down. I'm Mike Blewett for Kevin Walsh and producer Rob Bowe. Thank you. I'll talk to you next week. Kevin will be on with George tomorrow. Have a good day.